Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Voter turnout was the highest in over a century, according to the Washington Post. Nearly 65% of the voting eligible population cast a ballot this year. That figure is expected to increase as more votes are counted. This election also saw historic Black voter turnout, thanks to incredible grassroots organizing. Black voters overwhelmingly backed Joe Biden by a margin of 87% to Donald Trump's 12%, according to exit polls. 91% of Black women voted for Biden, according to NBC News. In his victory speech on Saturday, Joe Biden thanked Black voters, saying, "You've always had my back, and I'll have yours." Well, we begin today's show by going to Georgia. With 98% of the vote in, Biden is leading Trump by 14,057 votes. In January, voters in Georgia will determine control of the U.S. Senate. Joining us now is Tamika Atkins, Executive Director of Pro Georgia, an organization that works to create a state that takes care of its citizens and Georgia's natural resources. Pro Georgia began after a small group of nonprofits worked together during the 2010 election. Pro Georgia now consists of 30 organizations. And Tamika Atkins joins us from Atlanta. Hi, Tamika. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, it's great to have you, Tamika. I read the piece that you wrote for Medium, just talking about all of the amazing organizing that you've all done over the last couple of elections. And, you know, it's been a long and intense 4 years. I just wonder, now that it's over, how are you all doing? How are you all feeling?
Well, you know, I got to say that, you know, here in Georgia and our partners, we were feeling good, you know, since November 2nd. You know, when we saw the record turnout of, you know, new and low propensity voters, when we saw the record turnout of early voting by Black and brown folks, we already felt like we won, because really we want to make sure that we reduce any barriers to the ballot. And, you know, we feel like we're seeing the culmination of our work. And now we feel, you know, tired and simultaneously excited because we have a new journey ahead of us over the next 8 or 9 weeks.
Right. And as I was saying, it's over for the moment, because you have two very important Senate runoffs in January, and the entire country is now focused on Georgia.
Yes. You know, we are really excited to do our part to continue engaging people of color, marginalized folks in the two U.S. Senate seats races, just like we did this fall, just like we did over the primary. You know, but I think a race that matters to Georgians here is also the public service commissioner race. And that is also in a runoff. And the election was originally going to be December 1st. They moved it to January 5th. But, you know, in Georgia, we see, you know, older, more rural Black and brown folks, you know, dealing with liens on their homes, dealing with evictions because of these astronomically high, you know, utility rates. Right. So for us, the U.S. Senate race is just an extraordinary moment, but also like meeting people where they're at. This PSC race has immediate impact on their ability to, you know, have housing in some cases. Mm.
Right. Well, and meeting people where they're at is so important. We've been talking about the importance of grassroots organizing and you know, not making sure that campaigns don't just come to town for a couple weeks before the election and then leave. These relationships need to continue. According to the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus, 1.2 million Black Americans voted in this election, up from 500,000 in the 2016 election. These numbers are really incredible. Can you talk about just what you're hearing from people and how you all were able to bring in so many new voters?
So thank you for asking. I think what matters is how we do the work. It's winning, but how we win. And here in Georgia, we work, when we do our voter registration and civic engagement, we do it with trusted messengers. So that means we have 38 table partners who are, you know, doing community organizing, leadership development, advocacy, you know, for, you know, around housing, around a living wage, around LGBTQ rights. I mean, so all of these folks are providing services, direct services, community organizing, leadership development. And we acknowledge and recognize that our constituency, our base overlaps, and that if we want to build long-term sustainable power, we have to include voter registration and then voter engagement and education in our efforts, right? So what that means is that we don't show up in September and register people to vote. It means, you know, we don't talk to you once and then we don't talk to you for the rest of the year. We do integrative voter engagement, which means this is all year, every year. And when we talk to our folks, we're talking to them about voting. We're also talking to them about, you know, making sure that they have access to food during COVID-19. That means that we're, you know, providing them with testing locations. It means that we're, our partners are doing English as a second language courses. It means that we're registering people to vote at naturalization ceremonies. It means that we are supporting organizing for Fight for 15 to increase the minimum wage in Georgia. So it's a constant presence that builds trust with voters. It's not an overnight kind of work.
Right. And can you talk about the importance of ensuring that organizations like yours and the groups that you work with have the funding they need to do this important work? We had a labor organizer on the show on Monday, Jane McAlevey, who said, when you look at the money the Democrats spent on these Senate races, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they lost, she said, you know, Amy McGrath, according to the polls, was never going to beat Mitch McConnell. She was a moderate. She didn't. I mean, there's many, many reasons for that, but so much money was spent on that campaign. And Jane made a point that imagine if a percentage of this money went to the groups that you all work with.
Yeah, I mean, one is, yes, we need consistent funding. We need multi-year funding. You know, I think it's also trusting the leadership. And I know you've heard the hashtag trust Black women, but trust us when we say we know how to organize our communities. And even if that's not something that some of the funders understand, trusting us to know what we're doing in state with our folks. That's one. I think the other thing is that, you know, for there was a special election in 2017 in Georgia, and I think nearly $40 million was raised, and less than $3 million went to engaging Black and brown voters. And, you know, so, you know, we have to shift, you know, what it means to invest in voters and to ensure turnout, right? And that's only going to happen if we start valuing how C3 organizations do the voter engagement work. It is slower, but it builds the relationships, right? In 2016, Gwinnett County, which is now one of the most diverse counties, is the most diverse county in Georgia, voted for the most progressive candidate on record for the first time in history. Before there were other entities interested in Gwinnett County, many of pro-Georgia partners like Galeo, like Asian Americans Advancing Justice, like Center for Pan-Asian Community Services, like Women Watch Africa, they were already doing work with the immigrant population that had moved into Gwinnett County. And as they were providing them a variety of services, they were also registering them to vote. And for those who were not yet citizens, taking them to citizenship classes, making the courses available, and then being present at naturalization ceremonies to register them to vote once they became naturalized citizens. And that work happened from 2012 until 2016. So we were doing the work before there was interest in Gwinnett County. And then we see some of like the potential results. And, you know, again, we focus on turnout. And I think it just proves the story that if you invest in voters in a real way, in a real substantial, meaningful way, that we can see increase that turnout and then we expand the voice of the electorate. Hmm.
Tamika Atkins is executive director of Pro Georgia, an organization that works to create a state that takes care of its citizens. They are working with 30 organizations on the ground there. Now I would like to welcome Cliff Albright to the show. Cliff is co-founder of Black Voters Matter Fund, an organization working to increase power in marginalized, predominantly Black communities. Black Voters Matter has spent many, many months doing incredible work on the ground, registering voters in the South and the Midwest. And Cliff also joins us from Atlanta. Hi, Cliff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you wrote a great piece in The Guardian called Black Voters Drove Joe Biden's Victory and Have Offered This Country a Reboot. You write that The historic Black turnout was not a function of Biden and Harris. It was really driven by issues affecting your communities and the ability of organizers to really connect with people on the ground. Can you talk about that? Talk about some of the work that you've done.
Yeah, and I just want to ditto everything that, that Tamika was saying, who we work closely with here in Georgia, where she was talking about the long-term nature of this work. And it has been about, centering the issues. One of the things we always say at Black Voters Matter is we name the organization Black Voters Matter instead of Black Votes Matter, because we wanted to demonstrate there's a lot of people that care about our votes but don't fundamentally care about our voters. And so we always try to center our people, right? And in doing so, centering the issues. And so when we go about doing our work, it's not about the tradition of voting, right? It's not about the ritual of fill out this registration form. It is very much centered in the issues that our folks care about. In fact, when we come up across somebody who says that they don't, that they're not feeling the voting process, that it's rigged, that they don't care about it, they don't want to participate, we don't argue with them or tell them that they're lazy or tell them that they're crazy, right? We redirect the conversation by first and foremost saying, you know what, you're right. I feel the same way too. But let's have a discussion around what is it that you're interested in, what is it that you want to see different? And when we change that conversation so that we're centering the issue and not just voting, then now we're in a dialogue. We're no longer in an adversarial relationship. We're no longer arguing about voting itself. We're all agreeing about centering the issues and trying to see what we can do on those issues. When that's the heart of the conversation, then what we find happens is that somebody who started off antagonistic maybe or disengaged, all of a sudden, they're now committed. We've had this happen so many times just over the past 5 weeks of our bus tour that we did, which took us to 12 different states. When we center the issues, when we center issues like gentrification, when we center police violence, police violence is a perfect example. People talk so much about what it's going to take to get young folks involved. Young folks showed you what it's going to take to get them involved. They showed you what issue it is that they care about, right? And so, we don't have to go to young folks talking about Social Security. They've already demonstrated with historic protests over a 4-month period what it is that motivates them. So what discussions are we going to have around those issues and how we connect that issue of police violence and the protests taking place? How do we connect that to their daily lives and to the electoral process? When we have these types of discussions, when we talk about healthcare and the closing of rural hospitals in Black rural communities, because rural communities does not mean and should not mean just white folks. Right? We got Black folks that are in rural communities as well. And so when we center these issues, that's what drives turnout. And when you make it very specific and very local and very concrete, you don't have to fight to get people to turn out. People will turn out naturally because one, they see the connection, and two, because somebody has had a conversation with them.
And Cliff, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we have a really bad line. We're going to try to get you on Zoom so we can improve your line. I'm sorry about that. That is Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter Fund. Tamika Atkins is executive director of Pro Georgia. And if you'd like to join us, Tamika, so many people have been emailing us and calling this week to get information on grassroots groups in Georgia that they can donate to, because again, all eyes are on those Senate races. You can give us a call if you'd like to talk directly to people on the ground in Georgia, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Tamika, can you also give us a sense of just the politics in Georgia? On your website, you write that Georgia increasingly serves as a testing ground for regressive policies harmful to members of historically marginalized and underserved communities that later spread to other states.
Thank you for asking. So when we talk about things like at-will employment, things that have, broken unions, frankly, and union bargaining and representation across the country, that was tested in Georgia, right? When we think about some of the laws that have spread across this country, even voter suppression laws, when we think about exact match, having to have your signature match exactly, or if your name doesn't match exactly, and we're talking about maybe a hyphen in one document and not in another. You know, these laws are tested in Georgia to see if they can be implemented and implemented successfully, and then they're replicated in other parts of the country. And, you know, this is not, it's not a new phenomenon. And, you know, I forget the percentage, I will get it wrong, but I do know that a majority of African Americans live in the southeastern states, right? So when we think about not having Medicaid expanded, right, in a fully funded ACA, you know, it's again, it's marginalized folks who live in the southeastern states that are the most directly and disproportionately impacted.
Right. And that's, I think that is such an important point, because that is why organizations like yours are so important. I mean, we were doing a lot of shows about the, you know, Biden's ground game, and, you know, if sending people again to these communities just a month or so beforehand and then leaving just doesn't work. Do you think that the Democratic Party is getting this message? Because this has always been kind of a tension between local groups and, you know, the DCCC, but it seems to be getting even more attention this time around.
You know, I'm not sure if they're getting the message or not. I do know that we in Georgia, and I think in other state-based organizations, we're going to be consistent with our messaging. Mm-hmm. And I will say this, pro-Georgia is, we are a coalition, and we are only as strong as our member organizations. And so when we talk about capacity building and investing in these local grassroots organizations, it means, you know, multi-year funding, it means all kinds of access to tools and resources that they typically wouldn't have. Ultimately, this allows them to serve their communities better while simultaneously growing and expanding their voter registration and civic engagement work, right? So the work is slower, but it's more relational, and the relationships are deeper and more meaningful, right? And so, you know, I think we've proven that how we work and how our partner organizations work, that there are results.
Tamika Atkins is executive director of Pro Georgia, and Cliff Albright is co-founder of Black Voters Matter Fund, which is also in Georgia. Cliff, are you with us? Do we have Cliff? We're waiting for Cliff.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Much better line. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cliff, what are your thoughts about that? Just, this gets attention every election cycle, but it seems like it's more intense this time. The fact that the organizations on the ground are doing the work and really need more support, you know, rather than spending hundreds of millions of dollars, ridiculous amounts of money on these Senate races that the Democrats lost, imagine what groups like yours could do with just a percentage of that money.
Exactly. And that's really been our point, that, you know, instead of the party, in particular moderates in the party, complaining about, you know, progressive issues, whether it's Green New Deal or defund or whatever, you know, perhaps it's time for some just kind of like self-reflection and looking at how some of those races were actually run. And, you know, and the strategies that some of those candidates actually used and the strategies the party used. And you're exactly right. Some of the money that they spend on fancy or not so fancy television ads, if they had just invested it differently into community groups that have natural, authentic relationships that do this kind of work all throughout the year, if they had invested that money differently, then there's no telling what they could have achieved. That's really been our story. It's part of the reason we created Black Voters Matter. You know, we saw the same thing happening in the 2017 Doug Jones, Roy Moore race. And in spite of the fact that there was a lot of money in the state, we had groups that were calling us up from Alabama saying, there's no money on the ground. And we're like, what do you mean there's no money on the ground? I'm looking at all these reports of how much money has been raised, but it wasn't getting to the people that needed it to do what needed to be done to get Black voters to turn out. And so that really needs to be the lesson. It really shouldn't be a debate anymore. If it shouldn't have been a debate before last week, Tuesday, but if it was a debate, Georgia should have answered that debate, right? Because in this state, the way that the strategy that's been used has been by doing the exact things that Tamika was just talking about, investing deeply in these organizations that are doing this work. That includes not just statewide organizations, but organizations at the very local level, your churches, your NAACP chapters, your fraternities, sororities, you name it, youth groups, I don't care, Cub Scout groups, whatever it is, investing in the groups that have these relationships and that can spread the word about how important it is for folks to be civic engaged.
Right, at all levels. And since you brought up Doug Jones, Cliff, have you been able to talk with other activists in Alabama to find out why Doug Jones lost his Senate race this time around?
Yeah, I mean, we're still going. We're going to take a close look at the numbers. I mean, pretty much what we knew was that what we wanted to have happen was that Black voters do the same thing we were able to do in 2017, right? That we come out at an historic proportions in terms of like our percentage of the electorate in our turnout. At the end of the day, that's really all we can control. Now, what white voters in Alabama chose to do, whether or not some of the ones that refused to vote for Roy Moore actually came out this time and voted for Tuberville, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of analysis to be had around those issues. But at the end of the day, what we were most concerned with, whatever reason there is for Doug Jones losing, we didn't want it to be because of Black voters. So Black voters did some things that, and the other piece of it is this, right? In Alabama, unlike some of the states, because what's really been the story of this election, and especially as we're looking at these tallies that are still coming in late, the story has been the vote by mail, right? Alabama has a notoriously difficult vote by mail system. Same thing can be said with Mississippi, where Mike Espy did not do as well as he did a couple of years ago. It's no coincidence that you're talking about two states where one in Mississippi, they did not even accept COVID as a reason for folks to do absentee voting, right? That wasn't even an acceptable excuse. So whether it's because of that in Mississippi or in Alabama where COVID was an excuse, but the process is so difficult. You've got to have two signatures in Alabama, not just one, but two signatures to witness your ballot, or you've got to have a notary. Wow. Right. And who in Alabama has a notary just living down the street in the midst of a pandemic? And so I don't want it to be lost that this isn't just an issue of, you know, whether or not Black voters came out to the same extent or what white voters did. Structurally speaking, just by nature of the vote by mail policies, it was going to be incredibly difficult to get the same kind of vote by mail response in Alabama as what you saw in Georgia or what you saw in Pennsylvania or what you saw in Michigan. That's a part of the story that we don't want to be lost.
Well, and Cliff, I know we have to let you go in a minute, but one more question since you're bringing these issues up. The Trump administration is clearly failing or refusing to concede and filing these lawsuits that are going nowhere. I mean, we're at a point now where Republicans are standing up saying they have no evidence. These lawsuits are going nowhere, but it's pretty clear what they're doing. They're just trying to lay the groundwork for even more voter suppression. Given that voter suppression was really exposed this year, unlike any other year, What do you think, where are we going moving forward when it comes to voter suppression, especially in communities of color?
Yeah, you know, again, I think Georgia's an interesting case study because it would have been very easy after what happened 2 years ago with the outright theft of the gubernatorial race. I mean, like you said, voter suppression has been exposed. But I mean, in 2018, Georgia was the epicenter in terms of Brian Kemp, who at that time was the Secretary of State as he was running for governor. And, you know, between the voter purges, holding on the registration forms, closing polling places. I mean, we talk about a spectrum of suppression, right? Everywhere on that spectrum, they covered in that election cycle, with the exception of attacking the Postal Service. Now, that's a new one. That's a new one that we saw this year. And so, but it would have been easy after that experience for voters in Georgia and particularly Black voters to say, you know what, they stole an election. I'm so disgruntled. I'm so upset. I'm not even going to participate. And instead, what we saw was the opposite, right? We saw that Black voters came out again in historic numbers as if to say to Brian Kemp, you're not going to be able to suppress this wave that we got. And so I kind of feel like that's part of what we may see over the next over the next couple of years. The more, you know, we say it all the time, the more you suppress us, the more mad we're gonna get. And the more we gonna go out and tell some other folk and turn out. Now we don't want that to be the solution, right? We don't want the solution to voter suppression to be that we have to register enough folks and turn out enough to offset the suppression, right? What we want is that the suppression gets dealt with. What we want is that there are consequences for folks that do the suppression, not even just restoring the Voting Rights Act to where these things have to be pre-cleared, but we want actual consequences for when people, the same discussion that we're having around police violence and qualified immunity, right, which lets police officers and DAs get away with doing things that we know are wrong, but they got this immunity that keeps them from being prosecuted. We need that same discussion at the electoral level so that secretaries of state, prosecutors that go after these frivolous prosecutions of so-called voter fraud, not the real voter fraud, but the so-called voter fraud, right, the mom who registered at the wrong address or something like that. We need that discussion so that when people do these things, that there are actual consequences, legal consequences, or even civil consequences when they violate people's voting rights. Because right now, one of two things happens. Either they get away with it or they don't get away with it and they get caught, but there's no consequences for them getting caught. We need to change that situation.
Great points. Cliff Albright is co-founder of the Black Voters Matter Fund, an organization that works to increase power in marginalized, predominantly Black communities. They have spent the past few months, and much longer than that, obviously, but an intense past few months registering voters in the South and the Midwest. Cliff, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Tamika, before we go to break, what would you like to add about where you see voter suppression going from here?
I think we have to pay close attention to vote by mail and any attacks, further attacks on USPS. You know, I think we have to ensure that we have an accurate amount of drop boxes, which we certainly do not. And in Georgia, we have to be, you know, very much aware of, you know, the exact match rule and how many people are being purged or put on the pending list.
Right. The purging got a lot of attention out of Georgia in 2018 around the Stacey Abrams race.
Yeah. And, you know, it got a lot of attention. And also it wasn't the first time or even the last time since then that purges had happened at such an astronomical amount. You know, we have to do better at, you know, what it means to communicate with voters when they have flags on their account. How do we inform them better? We get a postcard in the mail that most people think is trash. It's small and it's tiny and they have no idea. And, you know, it's all of the bureaucracy that adds up to be voter suppression, right? Mm-hmm. It's insidious. It's slick. And, yeah, we just have to really be prepared. We've registered naturalized citizens to vote, included their naturalization certificate in the voter registration packet, and they were still put on the pending list because of their citizenship status, right? And if there wasn't an organization and the partners like Pro Georgia who don't, you know, we don't treat our folks like a one and done conversation, but do the follow-up to ensure that the people we registered can vote, right? So it's not just we helped register you, but making sure you get on the rolls, we would have never caught that, right? And it'd be great, you know, if it wasn't required of groups in Georgia with little funding to have to do that heavy lift.
Incredible. Tamika Atkins is executive director of Pro Georgia, an organization that works to create a state that takes care of its citizens. They are working with 30 organizations. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up after the break, we will continue speaking with Tamika Atkins, and we will be joined by Melody McCurtis, an on-the-ground organizer in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. This election saw historic Black voter turnout thanks to grassroots organizing. And we're talking about it with Tamika Atkins, executive director of Pro Georgia. Now I would like to welcome Melody McCurtis to the show. Melody is an organizer, activist, and deputy director of Metcalf Park Community Bridges, a community-led grassroots organization in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They focus on increasing civic participation in one of the city's poorest Black neighborhoods. Melody's incredible work was featured in the Frontline documentary, Who's Vote Counts, which we did a couple weeks ago. The Intercept also featured her work in a video that you can watch at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Melody. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Melody. You and your mom and others with Metcalf Park Community Bridges did amazing work knocking on doors. Even I saw a video of you trying to, you know, really encourage people who are not just kind of disenchanted with the system to get out and vote. And they also voted in many cases. What's your reaction to Biden's win in Wisconsin? This was a key win for the Biden-Harris team.
You know, I'm not surprised. I really feel like, you know, here in Milwaukee and being on the ground, and especially the work we did, we know that we really did relational organizing, not, you know, the old-fashioned, you know, transaction of we want you to vote and then we leave, which a lot of organizations do. Mm-hmm. But we do work all year round around civic engagement and getting our community involved. So I wasn't surprised by the outcome of this election. We put in a lot of work, and you saw that energy all over Milwaukee in a lot of Black neighborhoods and a lot of brown neighborhoods. People put in the work. And I think, you know, really understanding that we're all living in a pandemic and responding to the needs of the community and also educating the community on this is an election coming up and these are your options and this is how you do research. And what are your needs, right? And walking folks through the different disenfranchisement, you know, what they call safeguards that there are in Milwaukee, really walking folks through all of those different steps was key to, you know, the mass voter turnout here in Milwaukee.
And when you think about it, Melody, people are really standing up to voter suppression. We've been talking about this with Tamika. I was so struck in that Frontline documentary, Whose Vote Counts, when one of the producers showed you and your mom the names of people whose votes did not count for various reasons. And you were both floored by this because these are such, I mean, regardless of who it is, it's horrible, but these were active members of your community.
Yeah, and it's a great disappointment, right? Because as you guys saw in the film, some folks are not encouraged to vote, right? Mm-hmm. They don't see, you know, their value with these officials once they're elected. So, you know, it was very disheartening to see that some of the folks that we have been working with and that has been working with us and with their neighbors, and they went through all of their steps only for their vote to not be counted. You know, that is what we're up against. And it's so many different ways that folks' votes aren't counted, and then they're not even told that their vote wasn't counted.
Right. And then once they do vote and they put in the work, they expect to see some changes.
You know, you really expect once you participate, you do your civic duty, right? You show up to meetings. You say, this is what our community needs. You expect to be listened to, right? You expect that folks that's in these positions that you put them in will really respond to what the community is saying, really to respond into what the community needs are. And I think that, you know, this year, this pandemic has really lifted a lot of blinders off to really see like the decisions that folks make locally, as well as, you know, as far as this presidential election, it affects people's lives in a number of different ways. And I think that's why some folks that had never voted before really participated in this election. Mm.
Melody McCurtis is an organizer, activist, and deputy director of Metcalf Park Community Bridges. And I hope you can take the time to watch the Frontline doc, Whose Vote Counts, and then the Intercept video that featured Melody and many people in the community, their incredible work. Let's go to a few callers. Let's hear first from Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve. Thanks for holding. Is Steve still with us? No, let's go to Jonathan in San Francisco. Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, hi there. If the Democrats want to win in Georgia, the DNC should be funding organizations like Pro Georgia, Black Votes Matter, Fair Fight. And so my question to the guests is, do you all have any hope that that more dollars are going to be flowing your way specifically from the DNC, or is there a plan to put pressure on the DNC to stop wasting their money and, you know, give it to the people who know how to get the work done? Mm.
Tamika, you're executive director of Pro Georgia. What are your thoughts on that?
So I appreciate the question. I have no interest in funding from the DNC or any interaction with them. My win this year was the increased voter turnout. You know, my win this year was significantly reducing the gap with registered voters of color in Georgia. We are nonpartisan, and frankly, our victories are by reducing barriers to the ballot, making sure that voters can vote on the issues that matter to them. And then we're getting ready for 2021, making sure that their voice, right, and their vote is not diluted by gerrymandering, redistricting, by packing and cracking communities in 2021.
Melody, what would you add?
I agree with everything Tamika just said, and we are nonpartisan as well, and we're not interested in that funding either. Our main goal is that our folks have access and that these tactics aren't used to prevent our folks from having access to vote and access to really advocate for what they want to see happen, right? And so we have no interest in the DNC funding any of the work that we're doing. Hmm.
Well, thank you for the call, Jonathan. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's talk about the issues that you're hearing from people. I mean, Melody, you talked a little bit about this, just the fact that COVID has really exposed so many of the problems that we're dealing with in this country. How are people doing in the communities you work with when it comes to just making ends meet, paying the bills, feeding their families? How are people doing?
You know, it has been a tough time. I mean, our minimum wage here in Wisconsin is, I think it's at $8.25. So we have folks that have hours reduced. We have folks that have lost jobs. In Metcalf Park, we have 86% renters, and most of those landlords are slumlords, and folks don't have money to pay their rent. We have school systems that have completely shut down, and when they shut down in February, they had no plan, public or private. So now we have folks trying to figure out how can they go to work when they can't send their kids to daycare because of the risk of the spread. We have COVID cases spiking day by day. We have all of these different issues, folks trying to figure out where their next meal is coming from. And that's what we're seeing on the ground. And then what we're seeing is that, you know, they would give $10 million to this large organization for rent support. But if you have 30,000 people applying and only four people to really take on those applications, and then the application X-ing out folks from even accessing that money, it doesn't meet the need. So that's what we're dealing with on the ground. And that's why our mutual aid, we're still continuing our mutual aid efforts, trying to support our community with some of the things that they need during this time, because we know the effects of COVID. Even if COVID ended today, the effects of this pandemic might be lasting into 2022 from what we're seeing and everything that folks are dealing with.
And people really need some kind of relief bill. I mean, it the additional $400 a week stopped back in July.
Right.
Tamika, what would you add? What are you hearing from the communities you work with in Georgia?
You know, I think, you know, same thing as Wisconsin and what Melody said, people are hit hard and they are struggling. You know, it's not a competition, and our minimum wage is $5.15. Oh. And, you know, people get paid, actually do get paid $5.15. We're not even going to get into tip workers now. You know, our voter registration program, when we started the year in January, we were ready, right? We were like, it's 2020. There is interest and excitement by folks, by our people, our communities, to register to vote and to exercise their right to vote. And once, you know, COVID-19 coronavirus hit, we had to sit down as a group and say what makes sense. A majority of our partner organizations are led by Black and Brown folks, and Black and Brown folks are disproportionately impacted by COVID-19. And we decided that we're going to pause, right, our voter registration program in the way that we may typically do it, focus more on digital, and then really do civic engagement by providing information, but then also PPE. We sent over 50,000 masks out to our partner organizations for distribution in their communities. You know, our folks are, you know, becoming short-term temporary food pantries, right? Drive-up food pantries. They are providing and coordinating testing sites, right? And so we saw our role because, again, this investment is real and not transactional. It meant that we may not be necessarily supporting explicitly the voter registration program, but we are here to support and invest in our partner organizations leading on the ground. And right now, they and our people, we need PPE, right? We need hand sanitizer. You know, we need food. You know, and you know, it feels like 2020 has been a long year, right? Mm-hmm. And a day feels like a month. But you know, the census just wrapped up not that long ago, mm-hmm. right? And so all of our partners were also doing get out the count work, right? While still caring for their community.
I mean, it's incredible, Tamika, that you're still, I mean, of course, we all need every single city. We just had in the Bay Area, nurses are still protesting in the wealthy Bay Area for PPE. I mean, it's everywhere. And so I just wondered, Tamika, and then Melody, what are some of the demands that you're hearing from the community from a Biden-Harris administration? I mean, of course, we don't know how much power they're going to have depending on what happens in the Senate. And even if they do get the Senate, you know, there's a lot of talk about like a conservative Joe Manchin. Will he vote on big, big packages? But COVID relief really has to be at the top. What are some of the demands you're hearing, Tamika, from community members?
Some of the demands that we're hearing and from community members, from the U.S. government overall, right, is housing protection, right? That folks are vulnerable right now when it comes to housing. Help with education and with childcare, right? Like, what is the plan there? And as someone myself with two young children, it has been, I have the privilege to work from home with my kids, and it is taxing. You know, can you begin to imagine all the people who are still working, right, out in public because we didn't know essential workers were going to be essential workers, who have their children with them, children in the car, and they're still supposed to be online at school. And they are held to that standard, even though our world is completely turned upside down, right? So housing protection, education, and people are looking for, you know, health security, right? We didn't have it as Black and Brown folks prior to COVID-19. And now, you know, the disparities are worsening, right? And are widening. Right. And so these are the concerns on at the front of people's minds. How do we eat? Right. How do we have a place to live and a stable place to live? How do we make sure our children are getting what they need when it comes to access to education? You know, and how do we make sure we can live healthy lives?
And Melody, we'll go to you in a minute, but I just want to ask you, Tamika, what do you think of the debate that's being had between the moderate wing and the progressive wing of the Democratic Party around, you know, should candidates run on a Medicare for All platform? I mean, we'll go in depth on this in a future show, and we'd love to have you back. But just generally, what do you think of that debate and how it really translates in the communities that you work with?
We need Medicaid expansion. The mm-hmm. South would greatly benefit from Medicaid expansion. Before working at Pro-Georgia, I worked with the National Domestic Workers Alliance in Atlanta. Housekeepers, nannies, and home care workers, many of them actually fell into the coverage gap, right? And then, you know, struggled to pay for, you know, something above the bronze plan for ACA, right? There's a community, there's a population that needed Medicaid expansion, right? So I'm less concerned about, you know, the talking points, between these groups and more concerned with what our people are saying and what they've been saying now for several years.
Right. Melody, what would you add?
Everything Tamika said, I think that that's crucial. We need those things here in Wisconsin. And just to add to that, we are asking, you know, that, you know, folks are freed out of jails, right? In prisons, right? We know that our COVID cases are going up, and our folks need access to good health care. They need access to testing. We need a real plan for COVID, right? Because our cases are going up and up and up. We need a real plan that we're going to see some outcomes with. We're asking that, you know, we want folks to invest in community, right? So what that looks like is stimulus checks directly to folks impacted, right? Forgiving medical fees, right? And free testing for folks in these communities that have these high numbers, right? And people have access to them. So everything Tamika said, and I want to see it done. I don't want another press release. I don't want to see somebody's opinion. I want to see some action regarding health, regarding housing, regarding folks that's incarcerated that only have one mask, right? And that's what we're seeing on the ground here in Milwaukee, and this is what folks are demanding, right?
Well, we're going to take a couple of calls. We're almost out of time, but let's hear from Lena in Berkeley. Hi, Lena. Thank you so much for holding.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm excited to hear about how our money really goes farther when we donate to grassroots voting organizations led by people of color in the states where we're trying out the vote. I hope people start to really understand that money is so much better spent when we fund these grassroots local organizations. And I'm just chiming in to tell you about a project that I started a couple years ago. And we've been fundraising for the past 5 months, and we've just pivoted to Movement Voter Projects Georgia Fund, including the Black Lives Matter, Working America, Georgia, the Neuter Project, and about 10 other organizations that are really local on the ground in Georgia. And it's a super fun way for people to participate in fundraising and also bolster local chefs and restaurants that are really suffering pandemic now. So we're really excited to be supporting the Georgia Fund, which again includes all the hyper-local grassroots voting organizations. And we're just about to launch some new events with chefs and restaurants to support the fund. And this is a national project, so restaurants and chefs from Maclick Country can join us if they like. They can just email us at hello@dineforDemocracy.com. And we're on Instagram, Dine for Democracy. And we have a website, Dine for Democracy. And this is a super fun national galvanizing of the culinary community around supporting these hyper-local grassroots learning organizations. So it's a fun way to participate. I also want to thank the guests for their good work, because this is really where it's at right now. Like, this is really, we're going to make change.
Well, thank you so much, Lena. And sorry, her phone was cutting out there, but the website is dineforDemocracy.com. That's dineforDemocracy.com. Tamika, we've been getting phone calls from listeners all week and emails saying, how can we support the grassroots organizations in Georgia? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, we've been getting a lot of that too. And we're getting a lot of requests like, we're ready to relocate and move to Georgia. And I'm like, wait, yes, and. You know, so I think it's one of those things where I'm like, God, I appreciate the love. And also remembering that Southerners, Georgians, they got this. what I think would be great if they go to our website, www.govoteGA.org. We have opportunities for folks to plug in right where they're at into text banking and phone banking in Georgia if they want to support. They're also able to make a donation to that page. Pro Georgia does a lot of capacity building. So we provide tools to databases, you know, the hustle, the texting tools, reach, all the like really expensive software. In addition to that, we re-grant to our partner organizations. So there's that part. You can also find a list of all of our partner organizations on our Go Vote GA website, and you can click through, learn more about them individually, and donate to them directly.
Great. And you can find that information at yourcallradio.org. Tamika Atkins is Executive Director of Pro Georgia. This group consists of 30 organizations working on the ground in Georgia. Tamika, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Melody, we have about a minute left, but I just wonder, you know, after you all take a rest and breathe, what's next for Metcalf Park Community Bridges?
So we haven't taken a break. I'm actually in the office right now. We are getting rid of all of our furniture and turning our office space into a Metcalf Park Freedom Shop. So folks can have like a personalized package created, and they can do contactless pickup for folks that's homebound. We're still dropping that stuff off. And our organization also does work into around intergenerational wealth, civic engagement, safety, connectedness, cultural vibrancy, and health all year round. And folks can plug in through our Facebook page, Metcalf Park Community Bridges, or our Instagram, Metcalf Park 2020, or by visiting our website. Folks can volunteer virtually. They can volunteer in person for some of the things that we have coming up. And they can donate at our site at MetcalfParkBridges.org.
Well, Melody, you're right. When there's so much need, it's hard to take a break. Thank you so much for your great work. Please thank your mom for us, because it was amazing to see the two of you in action in that frontline doc and the Intercept piece. So thank you so much for joining us, Melody. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you for having me. And I will tell her that she's here.
Okay, great. Thank you. Melody McCurtis is an organizer, activist, and deputy director of Metcalf Park Community Bridges, a grassroots organization in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They focus on really working with and assisting the community. It's one of the city's poorest Black neighborhoods, and I hope you can take some time to watch Melody and her mom and others in action. They do really amazing work. Find more information about these groups at yourcallradio.org. Thank you, and a big happy birthday to Leah Cesarine. Leah produced today's show, and Leah has been doing amazing work on so many of our shows this past year and has found great guests like Tamika and Melody. Thank you so much, Leah, and happy birthday. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.